Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
The Red Sox have won the World Championship!
What's up? Welcome back to Play Tessie. It's episode 124. This is the official podcast of 78 Win Seasons, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEI. Before we get going, hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, wherever you get your podcast. Rate it 5 stars. We really appreciate it. You can also find us on YouTube on the WEI page. Hit the thumbs up there. That we really appreciate that. And as always, find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. Here with Pat, here with Joe, it's Gordo here. And this is the longest we've gone in between episodes legitimately since we started this podcast. Like actually have not gone this long without seeing your guys' faces since like I met you. So weird. Actually, Pat, I saw at my wedding. Sorry, Joe. I didn't know Joe.
Still waiting for the invite, bro.
It got lost in the time warp mail, but it's on its way. And then you can show up later. But yeah, basically the way this timeline went was wedding stuff started getting crazy on Saturday for me. Like there was like a bunch of tasks, like people started showing up to town, like we were seeing people, like stuff got crazy. Then on Sunday there was the rehearsal and the welcome party. Then on Monday was like a full day of chaos and the wedding itself. We went back home on Tuesday, flew to the DR today as we're recording Wednesday. And all throughout that stretch, the Red Sox did not win a single game. And it feels when like so much of that stuff like happens, it feels like a really, really, really long time has passed. And they just haven't won a single game in that stretch.
It's so bad now. It's so bad right now. This sucks.
Also, PSA, Pat's mic broke. So he sounds like he's talking into a toaster, but you can get the words.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the blessing in disguise, at least for you, Gordo, is that you were more focused on the wedding and having a good time. And I guess Pat, too, to an extent, maybe checking a little bit more than Gordo. So you didn't have to actually witness the embarrassment that happened over the weekend and now after this Mets series. So lucky for the two of you. I the stupid dedicated fan that I am still watched all three games, and it got more and more painful throughout each game. So yeah, I think Pat said it best that it's not great at all.
The first game of the Mets series was the first Red Sox game that I didn't watch a single pitch for in any capacity, like on the TV, computer, phone, anything. It's the first game I didn't watch a single pitch of. Certainly this year, but honestly, I think it's been multiple years since there's been a game where I didn't even like I've been busy for games, but I'll usually like find a way to like at least watch innings on my phone if I'm busy. Like this is the first time in straight up forever where I didn't do it. But Pat, how you can attest to this, how many people that gave speeches at my wedding made some sort of reference to me being a complete Red Sox nut?
Oh, that wasn't even the best part, honestly. So every speech had they alluded to Gordo's unhealthy habits with the Red Sox, much like all of us. The best was I had people who I had never met before come up to me and be like, hey, we're taking bets. We're saying over under half an inning Gordo watches during the wedding tonight. The under hit. I made money.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is that like, is that, I don't even
they
know.
They never say you make it until your own prop bet. So,
yeah. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. Ask Marissa.
Yeah. Marissa, is it a good thing or a bad thing that I hit the under on over under a half an inning watched of the Red Sox game on wedding day? She says good thing.
She says good thing. I would agree.
She should definitely be of that opinion.
I mean, you're gonna get both sides of the aisle. You're gonna get one side who's gonna say Gordo's that diehard even during his wedding. He's watching the game. Way to go, dude! And then you get the other side who's like, dude, it's your wedding day. How are you not paying attention more to your ceremony and the reception and the ceremony?
You're gonna whip out my phone during the ceremony. They ask for the vows, and I just pull out like the third inning.
No, so during the ceremony, I go up to Gordo and I go, it's 1-0 Mets. And Gordo goes, no, last time I looked, it was 1-1. I go, you got to be kidding me.
And then I asked my buddy like a little bit later for a score update. It's 4-1, and that was that.
And then I just started double fisting.
Oh, yeah. It was a good time. I enjoyed, like, sometimes I feel like people are afraid of worlds colliding. And in some cases, like, that's true. But worlds colliding in this case was awesome. Like, Pat and Coop and Bradfo and Bradfo's wife Jen just like being around like all of my family and friends was really cool. Like, I don't know another circumstance where those people would all be in the same room together, and I don't know like if that would ever happen again. So it was cool.
Yeah, and I would also mention Gordo and Marissa have significant sparks. They are nothing compared to the sparks that me and Gordo's dad now have.
It's true. Pat, my dad.
I know, he's like your new best friend.
So I met Gordo's dad at the welcome event, and we just hit it off, hit the ground running. Reception comes on. One of Gordo's friends comes up and goes, we need to get your dad in the middle of the dance circle now. Gordo goes, I think there's only one guy who can do that, and looks at me. And I go, I don't think I could do that. Gordo goes, no, dude, go try. So sure as shit, I walk up to Gordo's dad. I say, dude, you're wanted in the middle of that dance circle. He goes, I'm not going. Like, I'm asking a girl to dance. I put my hand out and say, I'll walk you out there myself. He put his hand in mine, and we walked into Waka Flocka, no hands. His dad went nuts.
The beauty was when Pat
That is asked, the perfect love story. That is the perfect beginning to a love story.
It truly was. Pat, you phrased it perfectly. A beautiful spark. But the beautiful thing about it was when he asked, no hands wasn't playing yet. It was It was like maybe like 2 seconds after he finally agreed to do it that, of course, no hands comes on. And like, there's no way my dad has ever heard that song before. But he rocked out, man. Like, he was.
He went nuts.
He went nuts. My dad and Pat, a beautiful friendship. And you guys made quite the impression on my family and friends. Everyone there loved you guys.
Let's go. And then so we're in the middle of not even the ceremony. The rabbi is speaking, and I am middle of the section, whatever, minding my own business. Gordo's dad, who did a great job officiating.
That's true. Yeah, my dad officiated the wedding.
Me and him lock eyes, and I just go, oh, that's weird. Gordo's dad, while the rabbi is speaking at his son's wedding, looks at me and just goes. So I go, I don't think he did that to me. So I did this back. And we went back and forth for a good 30 seconds.
For those listening, Pat's like, what would you call it? Like bouncing your eyebrows up and down?
The eyebrow twitch.
Yeah. And I'm like, what is it? Coop is seeing this all happen next to me. He leans in. He goes, what the fuck are you doing? I go, well, I don't know. He started it.
Can I campaign now to have Gordo's dad on an off-season episode?
Dude.
Oh, we
that would
about
be
this.
Legendary.
Two option 1A, 1B, Dom Smith, Gordo's dad. Like, those are the top two.
Oh, get them in the same room on the same screen. Look out.
My dad loved, we would go to Sox games earlier this year, and he loved that the whole Dom Smith, the first baseman that stepped up. He thought that was hysterical. But yeah, no, it's interesting you bring that up because we talked about that a bunch. Like, Pat or someone went up to me, he was like, oh no, it was you, Pat. Pat was like, dude, your dad's got to come on an episode this offseason. Like, full stop, has to happen.
Yeah,
we'll make it happen. He's going to do it. He has no idea. He's going to have no idea how to work. He's a very, very smart guy.
No, here's the thing. Me and Sammy take an off day from recording episode. It's you two. You get your dad. Gordo, you just sit in the background like I normally do and let Pat and your dad go to work.
Let him cook. Let him cook.
The best part of, not the best part, the funniest part of the entire weekend was when Gordo's dad met Bradfo, because he came over to our table and like, I could see him trying to like think of who we were. Like he knew our faces, but couldn't think of who we were. And Rob said something.
Did he scream out McFarland?
Oh, and not to mention, he's a great podcaster. Yeah, no. He goes, not to mention, he's a great podcaster. I see the switch in your dad's head flip. He looks at Rob. He looks at me. He looks at Coop. Coop is sitting next to Rob. He grabs Coop by the collar of his shirt and goes, get up. Sits next to Rob and goes, how many times are you going to make my poor fucking kid eat wasabi? You fuck him with those trivia questions every time. It just starts going at Rob. And Rob was like, that's the best part is when people eat it. It'd be boring if not. And he goes, well, you leave my son out of it.
That's amazing.
Oh, sorry, Sammy, for the next time you guys go on. Baseball isn't boring.
Oh, my God, it's so good.
Yeah, we're at TBD on whether that's going to get me off the hook for wasabi for the future or just make it twice as bad. We will see. But next time I'm on radio, which I assume will be like, 2 weeks from Saturday, I'm going to make sure that he calls in and we have him on the air for a little bit of that session. Because that's good stuff.
How did Bradfo do lifting the chair? I know he said on radio that was going to be his. his job, and then he corrected it by saying like just to make the camera angle and the optics make it look like I'm holding the chair. And then I saw the photo you tweeted out, and it was just single hand raised out.
Everyone is like raising Marissa and Gordo up like crazy. Rob comes around the back and just puts his finger on the already bouncing chair for that picture. He was not lifting the chair.
If you haven't seen that picture, it's a great picture. I have it tweeted out on my timeline at Boston Sports Gordo to wish Rob also a happy birthday. Happy birthday, Bradfo.
Oh, yeah.
Jewish weddings and bar mitzvahs, like the tradition is you put the person of honor on a chair and they play the hora and they bounce it up and down like all of the strong people come and lift up the chair up and down. And Rob was very excited to semi-partake in this because he has bum wrists. You can see like all of my strapping young men friends doing the heavy lifting and Rob just in the back having a jolly old time.
Also, Gordo, can we talk about your face right here? You look a little concerned, like you might not trust these guys to lift you.
Well, you know, throughout with that lasted maybe a minute and a half of bouncing up and down. And there were two or three instances where I got tipped. It wasn't to the point where I was going to fall out, but I could feel their strength waning. Like they were getting weaker and weaker as the bouncing went on. So especially towards the end, I was like, all right, like, let's see how they do, but they did a good job. And then we lifted Marissa's parents, but not mine. My dad, He didn't go in a chair.
He was crowd surfing.
He's got the whole labrum thing going on in his shoulder. He's been doing doctor. He's not risking anything.
Oh, how did I forget this? So Gordo's dad during his like opening speech, he said something along the lines of like, there's so much love here today. Like my heart is pounding out of my chest. It might explode. I'm so thankful for all of the doctors in the crowd. Gordo, while holding his soon-to-be wife's hands under, what's it called?
Under the chuppah.
Yes. That line comes out. He does a complete 180, finds me in the audience, and just goes, and then goes right back to me. I was like, what is happening?
Locked eyes. It was fantastic. God. But yeah, wedding was awesome. Truly a perfect day from start to finish. All the family and friends that made that happen and made it so special, like so appreciative. And like, they all know that. And they all know that I love them. Pat was so awesome that you guys, that you Coop and Rob and Jen could be there. But Yeah, man. Just so appreciative. Way more appreciative of you guys and all my friends and family than I am of the Red Sox right now. I guess I'll just start this out by asking you guys a question. Are they dead?
Yes.
That's a pretty not as confirmed yes as Pat, but I will say yes. Their season's over. It just feels like after tonight, it felt like every night for the past week or so since we previewed the weekend series that in Detroit, that the energy was just drained and it got drained more and more. It's like when you're in a video game and you're battling the boss level and you see the little health bar, that it's like it's maximum health, that it goes to the yellow, that it goes into the danger. Right now, they're in the red. They're in the danger. They maybe have like 5% left, and it just takes one big knockout punch for them to be dead and for their season to be over. That's where I am.
Joe, I think I'm on the same page as you there, because as it stands right now, wild card, they're 5.5 out, and now there's a team in front of them in the Tigers. So where I have them at with 5.5 out with 22 games to go is you're out of contention there. Out of contention and dead are kind of two different things, because they're two perfect days away from being 3.5 games out with 19 to go, which is not out of contention. So I can't like officially declare them dead, but they're a dead team walking, that's for sure. They don't score runs. They play subpar defense. The bullpen has been, I was going to say suspect, but it's just been bad for a while after it recovered from its previous bad stretch. Starting pitching for the most part has been okay, but I think the story of the season is every aspect of the roster, whether it be the offense, the defense, the starting pitching, and the bullpen, has shown stretches of being really good, but it hasn't lined up together outside of that one stretch in like the end of June, beginning of July area, where for a while they had the best record in baseball. Like, the team showed its potential, but it's just they don't have enough really in any area right now to be a true playoff team. I tweeted this out before the game today, the third game of the Mets series. And it was, if the Red Sox just had the record that the Oakland A's do in the second half, then they would be at that time 4 games up on a playoff spot and 2 games out of the division. I don't know where those numbers stand now, but it's only been a day. Like, it's not the point of that tweet is not, because the A's have been really good since the break, but the point of the tweet is like, the A's don't have very much talent. Like, they're capable of doing what they've done. If the Red Sox could have just done even a fraction of that, then they're sitting in a playoff spot right now, and we're getting ready for October baseball. But not even just as it stands right now. Like, it's clear as day. Like, the October baseball for the Red Sox isn't happening this year, and it's tough to swallow, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too, on top of everything you just said, I want to say, going back to, I think it was like early June, right when they were kind of in the thick of it, they were up a game, they were down a game, like they were really bouncing back and forth between in and out of that third wild card. For over 2.5 months now, we had highlighted a stretch of games where they would have pulled away. They are about to finish that stretch, and they lost 3 out of 5 to the Toronto Blue Jays, 2 out of 3 to the Tigers, and just got swept by the Mets. So for those counting at home, that is what? 5-11? That's 3-8 in that stretch.
Okay.
They've 3 with the White Sox. If they lose, I'm not going to say anything. I was going to say something that, much like the FSU dude said he would eat poop or whatever it was, I would get called on Twitter. I'm not going to do that. But after that, it gets hard. Like, they're not beating teams they should beat, never mind teams that are playoff teams. After 3 at the White Sox, they go 3 with Baltimore, 4 with the Yankees, 3 with Tampa, 3 with Minnesota, 3 with Toronto, 3 with Tampa. So they're not – you don't look at those games and say they have no shot. But with how they've been playing, why should you think they have a shot?
You should.
Yeah, it's
you
pretty should. Much – Yeah,
you should,
pretty much to the point
of not even just
that.
With the schedule. Like, you see how they're playing these games. You see the games back. It just sucks because the Royals lost 7 in a row. The Twins were horrendous for an extended stretch. Like, those teams opened the door for the Sox. And it sucks that they're going to miss the playoffs because they couldn't get it done in a stretch of games where they should have. And I know the Tigers have played really well, and I know the Mets have played really well. And like they've run into these teams kind of at the worst time, but the Sox have been bad since before that. They've been bad since the break. Like all they had to do was be, I mean, man, if they were a 500 team since the break, they'd be in a playoff spot. So they really have no one to blame but themselves. And to me now, the question is, are they going to do the whole 78 wins again thing again, or are they going to be 500 or better? They're 500 right now with 22 to go. So unless you think they're going to finish the remaining games over 500, it's going to be yet another season of sub 500 baseball and now missing the playoffs five out of the last six seasons for the Red Sox.
Yeah, and Gordo, you were talking about like what the theme of the season is, and I agree with you to a point where these stretches haven't lined up with each other. But I think the overarching point of the season is that, as you just said, so many missed opportunities post All-Star break. I mean, this Sox team had to have had the most losses while leading in the eighth or ninth in a stretch of like 4 weeks than most teams can do in an entire season. You look at the number of games against the Dodgers and Colorado. I mean, how many games during the All-Star break, like I could count on both hands that the Sox wasted their opportunities. And it's not necessarily like you put a guy in a bad situation, like you had Zach Kelly going in your ninth. No, you had your supposed shutdown closer in some of these spots when Kenley gave up the homer to Kike in this past series, when you had to put Kenley in the eighth and he walks home a bunch of runs. Same thing with Rich Hill. So that's really the theme for me, is that, as you said, Gordo, they're doing this to themselves. I know Sammy doesn't want to put a ton on the front office, and I agree with him. So this is more focused towards the players. And I think, you know, this stretch, I don't want to throw Alex Cora insanely under the bus, but his decision-making over the past week or so has been really suspect. I mean, going all the way back to pulling Criswell during the start, and then just some of the moves he made during that series and then during the Mets series. Like, I hate to throw him in the category of blame pie, but I feel like he does have to take some responsibility in this.
So I definitely don't think Cora's been perfect. And the Criswell thing, yeah, I disagree with the move. I think everyone disagreed with the move. I think there's a value to that Cora is usually great with managing, obviously using the numbers, but also being able to use his gut. I think Cora is as good as they come of a game manager. But Joe, I gotta tell you, it feels to me like he's basically been put in a position with the way the players are, with the way the bullpen is, where he has to be perfect to get wins right now. And that's just to like, basically like he would, if he were managing these games perfectly, maybe they are a little bit closer to 500, but it's just, there is so much going wrong. And I don't think he's without blame, but you look at the players, you look at the team that's been fielded, you look at ownership not being willing to invest. And, you know, obviously we're going to have we record all the time, and we're going to have a gazillion episodes coming for you this offseason on what we would want the Red Sox to do to end this drought and get back to the postseason for the first time since 2021. We will do those things at the appropriate time, but just right now, like, it's just a combination of everything going wrong. It almost feels like, to me, impossible to play the blame game, because it's just everyone should be being held accountable. And I guess that can kind of transition us to our next point here about this whole Rafi Devers conversation, where after the second game of the Mets series, and Rafi's been in one of the worst slumps, if not the worst slump of his career, certainly since his breakout in 2019. We haven't seen him play like this, and I know he's playing hurt. I know he's playing through shoulder stuff, and honestly, there's probably more that we don't even know, because Rafi plays through everything, and he's a warrior for doing it. It's one of his best qualities that he just doesn't miss games unless he's absolutely forced to. But after the game, he was sitting by his locker with a bat in his hand, clearly upset by how the team's playing, by how he's playing. Like, obviously, he wears this stuff on his sleeve. He wants to win as much, if not more, than anybody, and like, no one's questioning that. But the issue here, and the thing that the media took exception to, was he didn't tell them that he wasn't going to talk. He sat there and showered and whatever for over an hour. And then while the media waited for him for over the hour, he then finishes up all that and then says that he's not going to talk. So basically the issue that the media has is not necessarily just that he didn't talk, though, according to Chris Cotillo, Rafi not talking after tough losses and tough games is something that higher up people in the organization have an issue with and want to be fixed. But the issue here is not that he didn't talk. It's that he didn't say he wasn't going to talk and then proceeded to make the media wait an hour only to not speak after. And there's been a lot of dissenting opinions on Twitter about it. And I wanted to give you guys the chance to state your piece here. Pat, I'll start with you, man. Like, does the media have the right to be upset about this? And is this a big deal?
I think that this select one is not a big deal. I think the theme of him not speaking after bad stretches and bad losses, that is a big deal. But I think if he had good intentions, like if he was just trying to cool himself off in his locker, shower, get good, kind of clear his mind a little bit, and then had every intention of going and speaking to the media, and then right before he was about to do it or leading up to it, he's like, I really just can't do this. You can't blame the guy. That being said, historically, he has not been one to stand in front of the mic and kind of face the music as the veteran on this team, the highest paid player on this team, the face of this team. And that is something that has to change because especially there's a lot of things that you can go out and you can sign to make a team better. You can go sign an ace. You can go sign a closer. You can go sign a second baseman. What you cannot sign is a veteran who has been on that team for X amount of years and is a face of the franchise and has been since Bogaerts left. So for me, the theme of it is, yeah, it's a big deal. He has to realize kind of where he is. He is the face of the team. He has been there for, this is what, his seventh year, sixth full year. And that comes with the territory.
I think it might be his eighth. Didn't he come up in 17?
18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Yeah, I think you're right. Eighth.
Yeah.
But it comes with the territory. Crazy. You've been here for 7-8 years. You've been around such great leaders. Like, even when Sale wasn't healthy, he was in front of the microphone. Xander was always in front of the mic. Mookie wasn't really in front of the mic all of that much. It was typically Xander just because of...
But that's the thing. There's other guys. Pedroia was there. Xander was there. Yeah, guys, exactly. Guys, they had guys.
And especially, too, because it was a storyline up until Xander left that Xander really took Rafi under his wing. How to navigate through Boston, play for such a big market team, be the face of a franchise, and grow as a leader. He has done all of those things except face the media, face the music, talk about rough stretches, bad games. And that's like the last step he has to take. There's no way around that. There's not a guy coming up in the minors who's going to have more years with the Red Sox than him, more seniority than him. It is him. He has to do that.
It's interesting, Pat. It's interesting you take that stance. And I want to give Joe the chance to give his piece here. But I just, from what I saw online, and you guys can tell me if you saw differently, but I thought I saw a lot of people siding with Devers and saying that, you know, obviously, people are going to side with the players over the media. That's not surprising at all. But people saying that he has no obligation or he's under no obligation to speak. It's not necessarily like the most important part of his job description. I don't know how much I agree with that. But I saw a lot of people get it. And the person who surfaced it was Chris Smith from Mass Live, who is a friend of the program, has been on the show. He's a great guy. We really like him. And you know, I thought he got a lot of heat from it that honestly I wasn't necessarily expecting him to get. Joe, did you think that this was a big, like, did you think that the whole Devers thing was a big deal? Or do you think that this should have been kept in-house, discussed amongst reporters, and Smitty shouldn't have put it online?
I'm kind of in the same line as Pat, where the small sample size that we saw this past week in the Mets series is not a big deal, but it's eventually accumulating. It's like when you accumulate debt over time, you actually got to pay for your sins. And to the point you're making about the fans choosing Devers over the media. I think part of that is that they don't understand sort of this, I guess, this mutual agreement, if you want to put it that way, towards the media and the players. Because, I mean, this isn't like any other sport. This is a 162-game season. They're there almost every day. So there's kind of this unspoken unspoken rule of, if you're present in at your locker, you just come out and say, you know, if someone wants to talk to you, you say, yeah, absolutely, or no, I don't want to talk today. For Devers, it's the consistent issue that Pat mentioned, is the guys that he's looking up to, he is now one of those guys, and he has not taken the step. Because you got to remember, these new young guys, the new era, like the Willy Abreus, the Sedan Rafaelas, even the Jaron Durants, have only been up for a handful of years. They're looking to Devers and how he is treating these situations. Like when Chris Smith is putting out there that ownership isn't happy, of course they're not happy, because the guy who is basically, or who is the face of their franchise, probably the leading player when it comes to jersey sales amongst fans, maybe the most recognizable name among Red Sox fans, is kind of staying quiet, is kind of in his own space, which isn't a bad thing to say, but you do want to see a little bit more accountability when it comes to Devers wanting to, or not wanting to, express himself, but the idea of just coming out and sort of protecting the franchise, you know, not saying that it's raising the issue of dedication when it comes to Devers, because we know that's not the case at all. But there are going to be whispers around saying, like, if this guy is going to be a sore loser and not talk to the media, then what kind of a teammate is he? What kind of a leader is he? We're not in that conversation, but I can guarantee you there's going to be a whisper or two where it gets brought up.
I think one thing that is worth mentioning, because I love Rafi. I love him. I'm so happy he's my franchise third baseman. It's also really not fair to him that there's really no other veterans on this team. Story's a guy who he had the offseason infield camp. Like, he is like an MLB veteran who's really good at, you know, kind of in the clubhouse leadership. And that obviously will be back hopefully next week and next year. But at the same time, like, a lot of the missing pieces that they've had for years, a starting pitcher, stable middle infielder, like, these are positions where they've kind of passed up on veteran leaders, free agent wise, trade wise, like, whatever it may be.
And even when they brought them in, it's just been a revolving door. Justin Turner only here for a year, Duvall yeah. only here for 1 year, so on yeah. and so on.
And I think that aspect you can fix, and that can take a load off of Rafi. If you go out and you get Max Fried, a Corbin Burns, like a whoever, a guy who's been around the league, been there, done that. That's the kind of guy who can help a Rafi with, you know, delegations, clubhouse leadership. But it doesn't really get around the fact that he needs to talk. He is the guy, but having someone to talk to, confer with, like all of that, that helps Rafi, helps the team, helps this whole should he talk, shouldn't he talk. It's that can be addressed.
See, here's the thing. I actually don't know how much I agree with that, just because it's hard to join a team and in year one just be a leader amongst men who have played together in some cases for years, whether it be on the same big league team for years or whether they go back in the minors. It's hard to step in, and that's what made Justin Turner so special. And he is like a once in a generation type leader of baseball players. He stepped in and was that voice that the Red Sox needed with Xander Bogaerts and JD Martinez departing. With Justin Turner leaving, the Red Sox never really replaced that. And granted, it's not easy to replace. Like, they clearly want it to come from within, but I think it would have been valuable to have him for another year, just because this team clearly doesn't have that leadership, and the guys that they seemed to want to step up into that leadership role were Trevor Story with his camp, and clearly at the beginning and in spring training, he was trying to take on that leadership role. And Tristan Casas was trying to step into that. He was going to the rookie camps that the Red Sox hosted to be sort of a sounding board for those young kids who were on the precipice of making their big league debuts. Unfortunately for the Red Sox, Tristan Casas and Trevor Story both missed significant portions of the season. And as you know, even Pedroia, when he went down and he wasn't playing, he wasn't able to stand in front of the microphone and speak for the team. If you're not playing, you can't speak for the team. And so this team needed someone to step up, someone to be that veteran voice. And I think for a while it was Rob Refsnyder, and I know that they kind of looked to him as the team captain, but Rob Refsnyder is not an everyday player. He is a platoon guy, and if the team loses and he didn't play that day, he's not going to be the guy to step in front of the microphone. And unfortunately, I want to go back to the point that Pat made before about, like, we don't know the situation with Devers. We don't know if there was something that came up at the last second that made it so he couldn't speak. But the fact of the matter is it's just not a good look. And obviously we don't know what happened, but it's about the buildup of other instances. Like with Xander, I remember there was a period of time in Xander's last year where he didn't speak to the media, and it was like a complete shock. But the response to it was, and from the media too, it was, man, like, this guy's really going through it this year. Clearly, like, it being a contract year and his uncertainty about the future and the team not playing well is getting to him. And, like, I feel bad. But for Devers, because, and just like you, Pat, like, I love Rafael Devers. He's one of my favorite players that's played for this team in years. But unfortunately, when you build up the reputation as a guy who is not always willing to speak after tough moments, after tough games, both personally and for the team, that builds up. And I, to be honest with you, I was surprised to see the amount of people online defending him for this one. I feel like I just completely side with the beat writers, who have a tough job to do. They have to maintain relationships with the guys while keeping it real and covering the team and putting super late hours in to do it. And so when a guy keeps you waiting there for an hour and then doesn't talk and just wastes your time, I understand the frustration, and they have every right to be frustrated, whilst also understanding that fans are always going to side with the players. They know that, but they have every right to be frustrated here. And look no further than Alex Cora, who before game three of the series said it's a problem and that can't happen. Look no further than the high-ranking officials in the organization who have privately acknowledged that it's a problem. According to Chris Cotillo again there, if they're all saying it's a problem, yeah, it's a problem. And I know it's tough because the team has no veteran leader, but when Trevor Story and Tristan Casas go down and you needed someone to step up and take on that role, because someone's got to speak when the team's struggling, it can't be nobody. Who else but the $300 million man? That is whether he wants it to be or not, that's Devers' job.
I guess what I would say to the fans, or to the people who are siding with Devers over the media, is, let's say you had a meeting for work and you were there and you were ready and you had a little bit of energy because you think you might get something good out of this, and you're waiting there for an hour, just like the beat writers were. And then your boss texts you and says, oh, yeah, I rescheduled the meeting. I just did this like 5 minutes ago. And so you just wasted an hour of your time. So that's what I would say to those who are agreeing with Devers over the media. But what you were saying about this being a problem, this is a fixable problem, though. And that's the good thing, is because Devers is still relatively young where he can fix this. Like you guys were saying, he's doing everything that a leader should do, except for the speaking to the media part. He's going out there and playing when he's clearly hurt. Even in this slump, you can tell that shoulder is not 100%. He's lobbying for Alex Cora. He wants to play every day. He wants to play in the field every day. He doesn't want to take days off. So he's doing everything. I'll reiterate, he's doing everything a leader should, except for speaking to the media. And that can be fixed. He just has to have a serious conversation with any parties involved, whether that be ownership, if Breslow gets involved, if Cora gets involved, which I'm sure he will, because Devers goes to Cora for everything. But the beauty of this is that it is fixable. And I'll say exactly what you two guys were saying. I love Devers too. I think for him to be the focal point of your lineup and your franchise is a great move. He's one of the few guys you would want leading that lineup. But again, these sort of issues can be fixed.
Here's the issue, though, is yes, they can be fixed, but this has been a problem for years, man. He's just not been the type to speak to the media. And obviously, like, you can't get inside a guy's head. You can't know what he's going through. But unfortunately, part of being a $300 million man, whether he likes it or not, and clearly he doesn't want to be seen as like the face of the franchise. He wants to hit homers. He wants to put up stats and win ball games, and not necessarily and it's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, obviously, like, when he grew up dreaming to be a baseball player. He didn't grow up dreaming of having a bunch of microphones in his face and having to answer when you're in a bad mood. Like, I get it's not easy, but unfortunately, when the team needs you to step up, you just got to step up. Whether you like it or not, you're the leader of this team. Whether you consider it by default or not. So, I mean, I know they're trying to home grow others, and maybe next year, Trevor Story and Tristan Casas will stay healthy, or Jaron Duran becomes more of a vocal leader, because I know they've been, you know, sort of looking to him to be a leader at times. But it's something that's going to need to be fixed. After tough moments, someone does have to speak for the group. And to the group, too, because if no one's speaking for the group, you have to wonder who's speaking to the group from a player perspective.
Yeah, like, there should have been a players-only meeting maybe a week or two ago, but we can't identify who would rally that and put it together. So I do agree. This is like, I still believe that this is fixable, but they're going to have to do it like now. They're going to have to start doing that now rather than just wait till the offseason.
Well, I'll tell you, Joe. Even if he speaks to the media after every single game for the rest of the year, it feels like it's too late for this group to go anywhere. But no time like the present to fix it. But yeah, I mean, bigger picture, not saying the season is over, and I'm not saying the Red Sox are dead, but they pretty much are. Like, mathematically, you can still look at ways that this could turn in their favor. Like, the teams, some, like the Twins or the Royals and the Tigers could lose all these games and the Red Sox could go on a huge streak. But the way they're playing and with the amount of games left, I just very much wouldn't count on it. What I would be rooting for from here on out is, let's see this team finish over 500, finish on a high note, and show that they are truly one or two pieces away from playoff contention. Because at this point, John Henry and Red Sox ownership have shown that they're not just going to spend to fix things, you know, from a public relations perspective. They're not going to say, wow, we came in last now, you know, 3 years in a row, if that's what happens, or two out of the last 3 years and missed the playoffs, five of the last six, we need to fix something. That's not how they see it anymore. They're either just not spending at all, or they're only going to spend when they think they're a move or two away from true contention. So your best hope here is get this team a move or two away from true contention. So we're going to keep watching these games. Obviously, it's like, well, it's just what we do. But yeah, I would fully understand from your perspective as a fan, if you don't watch the games or are not as emotionally invested, like, I get it. It's hard when the games don't seem to mean anything, at least for the current season. It's hard when you're watching games only for what it means for the future, whether it be young players you want to see improving or for the things I just talked about with the spending. But that's going to do it for episode 124. Of Playtesti. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Before you go about your day, remember, hit that subscribe button. Remember to rate us 5 stars everywhere you're listening, multiple podcast platforms. It helps us out a ton when you guys do that and subscribe. Obviously on YouTube as well, on the WEI page, on the Playtesti playlist. So you can hit the thumbs up on those videos. And we are at the socials at Playtesti on both Twitter and Instagram. For Pat and for Joe, it's Gordo here for Playtesti episode 124. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.